providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And we are now shifting our focus to the energy sector as we are chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. Also publishes a free report called Eye on Energy, which breaks down more of the macro fundamentals in oil and natural gas. As we always do with Joseph, we'll start off on the macro front for oil and natural gas and then drive down into some of the stocks and answer some of your questions that you have sent in. Joseph, on the oil front, we have seen oil mostly trade sideways, but at least a little upward bias recently. As we're recording this, oil's right around $75 to $76 a barrel. Again, it entered the year in the low 70s, so kind of a slow trade, but at least a little upward bias here. Joseph, in terms of key fundamentals on the supply-demand side, anything else that's caught your eye? Take us through some of the key drivers, at least in the near term, for price.
Sure, my pleasure, and glad to be with you again. Crude oil, we had targeted, when we sent out our SCR Outlook 2024, we said that we thought in Q1 that we were looking for a range, which would be at the bottom end, 64, 65, and 80 at the higher end, and that seems to be where we see things for Q1. And the reason we're looking for lower prices is right now there's probably $6 to $8 of war premium in because of the Red Sea and the Houthis and the shipping requiring ships to go through the Cape around Africa, and that is adding to costs. We also had cold weather, which shut in a lot of North Dakota production, which is slowly coming back. So we're looking at, demand being weaker because of the cold weather and slow economies. We're seeing the UK coming out with recessionary data, as is Germany. We've seen China's stock market implode because of all the weak conditions there and the government trying to find ways to, get the economy back and get people spending. And then, the cold weather we recently had pushed the price up as well. Remember, we had almost blackouts here in Alberta with the warning to cut demand, which people did after they got the warning. And then with help from Saskatchewan, we didn't have any blackouts. But you've seen Texas getting close to blackouts. And then when those really bad days occurred, we had $10 gas prices. But now that we have milder weather, plus seven in Calgary, you're looking at prices under $2 again for natural gas. So for oil, I think we're in the next month or two, we could be looking at a break of 70 again. Every time we see it below 70, we're going to add new buy ideas. We right now, from early 2023, we were quite cautious. We only had five names. In March, when we had the $65 oil, we added 14 ideas. And then in December, when we busted 70, we added another seven. And then we minused out from takeovers a couple of companies. So the net is we have 25 ideas on the buy list right now. And my expectation is we'll probably add another five sometime between now and the end of February as we get pullback below 70. And then we're watching the TSX Energy Index. It's 239 today. We think it'll go below 230. And then the bullish percentage index, another index indicator we watch, was 65% 3 weeks ago. It's now 43. And we think it'll get below 10%, which is another buy signal. So we're watching our buy signals. And when we get them, we have a lot of stocks that are cheap. We've introduced two new stocks, one in our last issue and one in this coming issue. So we've got a lot of great ideas at bargain prices, trading around PDP, proved developed producing reserves, significantly below 2P reserves, and multiples of 2 and 3 times cash flow. So there's a lot of bargains in both the energy area, the energy service area, pipeline and infrastructure. This is one of the cheapest times that we're going to get. We're not going to get as cheap as March and April of 2020, but relative to other corrections in the sector, I think we're getting into bargain territory. And heading into the end of the year, if I'm right, that we go to $90 WTI, and then we start seeing $3 AECO and NYMEX on a regular basis, I think we're going to see the sector have the index go up by 25%. But since the index is heavily weighted to Suncor and the CNQ and Cenovus and Imperial, I think the more exciting growth-focused E&P companies and service companies could see 50% upside from the upcoming lows, which to me is very, very exciting. And as you know, I've been, you know, poo-pooing and being cautious for a while, and now I'm getting ready to not only say I'm a buyer, which I've been doing, as our people can see on the SCR buy ownership list that I've been buying regularly when stocks are cheap, but I'm getting close to, if we get this next decline, to saying the sector is a table-pounding buy.
All right, Joseph. So we'll be looking for this next pullback for the table pounding buys. And it's a similar message you had when we did see a low and then you caught a nice rally in that. So that was a good call last time. So hopefully we see that low. And then if you're looking for $90 WTI and $3 NYMEX and AECO pricing in nat gas, should be a nice run in the energy stocks after a corrective move. But I want to hone in on nat gas. We had talked a little bit before recording and you've talked on previous shows about the impact that the new liquid natural gas terminals are going to have in Canada and the U.S. I wonder if you could filter that down into how you expect that to affect the natural gas pricing in the market in the U.S. and Canada, because there's a big delta in some of the overseas pricing compared to what we see here domestically. And then how does that affect the nat gas companies? How do they capture some of that spread?
So I think the key is we have to remember that Canada and the west coast of Canada is a much shorter sailing distance between the west coast to Japan, to South Korea, to Vietnam, to China. And so that gives us an advantage over the Gulf Coast, which has to go through the Panama Canal or through the bottom of South America. That adds to the shipping distance and the cost. And if you remember, the Panama Canal has a lot of water problems, so levels are low, so ships can't be fully loaded, which again adds to the cost per unit of sending natural gas through the Panama Canal. So I think we're looking at a big advantage to us once we're up and running. The first LNG plant facility is called LNG Canada. Shell's the one who's the lead behind it with other partners. That'll be it, bringing on 2.1 BCF a day. That's on a base of 17 BCF being produced right now in Western Canada, so a nice growth phase. But when you add in that they're planning to do LNG Canada 2, Train 2, and then there's four other projects that plan to go up, backed by Enbridge and Pembina and the energy producers. All of that could add another 6-7 BCF, which is a massive growth rate on top of 17, and all of that could happen before the end of the decade. So that means we have a great growth. So let's look at the economics. If the price of natural gas is U.S. 18 to 20 in Asia, and we look at, it's $8 or so for to liquefy, to ship, and to put out on the other side and give a good return to the owners, then the wellhead price could end up being, for those companies that can contract into the LNG market, they could be looking to $5 to $8 Canadian per MCF. When you have a buck or a buck and a half all input costs, you can see that's a good margin, versus if you just sell into the domestic market at $3.
So, Joseph, what are the characteristics of the companies that will be able to take advantage of this spread when these facilities are built?
You're going to have to be a company that's either in Northeast BC. ARC is there, and Tourmaline is there, and, Crew Energy is there. And then there's, all the big guys, Sinopec is there. And PetroChina is there, Shell is there, so they're going to be putting in their own gas. But many of them don't have enough gas when they go to the second train, so they may need to buy reserves. But the whole process in BC of getting approvals to drill, First Nations, environmental hurdles, people would prefer to drill in Alberta because the processes here are more streamlined. The First Nations are on side more. And we're seeing a lot more activity in Alberta than BC. So I think that we're going to see gas going from northwest Alberta, so Montney, Duvernay gas going by pipe into BC, into the coastal pipeline. And then at the same time, we're going to see strong demand in the Fort Mac area because of the oil sands and SAGD. And then we have the gas that gets shipped to eastern Canada, and also to the U.S. As well. So we're going to see a tightening of supply, and the big supplies that are in storage right now will get drained quickly. That sets up, you know, very high prices for late 24, 25 on, and consistently higher prices. And even, and as more and more of these LNG facilities come on, it just tightens it up and tightens it up even more.
Well, Joseph, we probably get the most questions when it comes to energy around nat gas, even more so than oil. I think most investors are used to the volatility in oil and are trying to play that cycle the way you lined it out, buying on the dips. But with nat gas, it's so volatile. There's a lot of people that wonder if nat gas could get stuck at lower prices because of the huge amount of nat gas produced from oil production. We've had some energy specialists and commodity specialists come on our show and say they don't expect nat gas to do anything because of how much oil production has been coming out of the U.S., out of Canada, and all over the world. Do you think that peak oil production or growing oil production could put a crimp on the nat gas price in any way? Or do you think that because of the reason you just outlined, it'll overcome the excess of nat gas?
The argument is correct right now because we are adding to production in Western Canada because the TMX pipeline is going to take an extra 500,000 or 600,000 BOEs a day, which adds 10% to the production base of Western Canada. Once you have that on, there is no growth unless you're prepared to do rail. So to me, the argument is correct today that there's more natural gas being produced because of the condensate needed to move the heavier barrels and the oil sands barrels, and that is true. But once this new production is on for the TMX and the TMX is producing on a regular basis, then where is the next growth phase? And that's where I disagree with the bears.
So when you're looking at companies that have a split of oil and natural gas production, or just those that are purely natural gas focused, do you like, in a way, the safety or at least diversification that oil and natural gas companies provide? Or do you like the potential torque that just a simple, straight natural gas provider could provide?
Well, I like the companies that are natural gas with light oil condensate as part of the package, because you know the condensate is going to be needed, you know, in the Fort Mac and Edmonton area, with all the refineries, with all the new petrochemical plants. There's going to be a big demand domestically for natural gas. So I think the bears are wrong that there's going to be a glut of natural gas. Once the LNG comes on, that argument is gone, because you're taking away 2.1 BCF on day one of LNG Canada up and running. So to me, would they have an argument into late this year, maybe Q1 if something gets delayed for whatever reason. But, you know, like TMX has been delayed and delayed and delayed. You never know. But once the LNG Canada is running, I believe their argument is invalid at that point.
Well, Joseph, as far as the actual stocks themselves, between the oil and the nat gas stocks, if you look at ones that are primarily focused on either oil or nat gas, you've said in the past that you were a little more bullish on the nat gas stocks than the oil stocks. It sounds like you're bullish on all of them if we have a big run this year, but which one would you be favoring and why as far as outperformance?
Well, the reason I like natural gas stocks is that, I can see the price of oil going from, let's say, we're right now 75. It could go to 90 to 100 by Q4. And then next year in 2025, you might see $90-$100 pricing. So we're looking at a 50 to 70% increase in the price. Right now, we're sub $2 on natural gas. Once LNG Canada comes on, I think we're looking at $5 and $6 gas. And I think into the end of the decade, we look at $7 or $8. So one, you've got much higher price upside in natural gas than you do in oil. Second, you've got massive volume increases in exports and in demand versus what you would have for oil. So there's a 10% increase coming this year in oil because of TMX, but you've got a 30% plus growth rate in volumes of natural gas into the end of the decade. So I like natural gas stocks. One, many of them are trading at PDP values. And when there's a shortage of natural gas and we have a hot energy stock market, companies trade at 2P proved plus probable reserve values. Plus there's something for land and possibles. And we end up getting takeovers at the top of the cycle as we did in 2008, as we did in 1979, 80, 81, and companies trading at 2P. So you take value today where companies are trading at PDP on low commodity prices, you go from PDP to 1P to 2P, that gives you a big bump up of three or four times. Then on top of that, you add in the commodity price lift and also new exploration and more volumes coming on. And you're looking at reserve reports that in 2028, 29, that could be 5-10 times better than they are today.
Wow, that's very bullish heading into the end of this decade in terms of individual natural gas stocks or certain types of those stocks. Are there ones that you've noticed that are lagging or just completely underperforming the broad sector of natural gas stocks?
Oh, I think everything is. You know, if you look at names, you can look at Paramount, you can look at Tourmaline, you can look at, you know, Vermilion, you can look at CRU, you can look at NuVista. There, you know, Pinecliff, maybe Birchcliff. There's just you just like the whole list I'm looking at is trading below their book value, below their NAVs, and Tourmaline, the premier company, which is now trading, you know, in the where's Tourmaline today, $58. It has an NAV of 77. So even the premier company is trading much cheaper. If you go to Tourmaline, it's trading at 25, or Paramount's trading at 25, and it's got a $41 NAV based on 2022 reserves. You know, and you start taking into account the upside. Here's another cheap one, CRU, which is trading in the fours. 2022 NAV was 1570, and that NAV will go up in the next 4 or 5 years.
Well, Joseph, let's also talk about some of the oil stocks. That was a great list of natural gas stocks for investors to look at in their watch list. But in the oil stocks, are you more interested at this point in 2024 in the dividend paying larger companies that are more stable and can they keep paying dividends at current prices, and or the smaller, more growth oriented companies that can maybe drill more wells, grow their production profile, have a nice growth wedge? Which ones animate you more for 2024?
Well, you know, if you look at companies, you know, Whitecap is 66% liquids, you know, and it gives you a dividend of 8%, and they're paying down debt pretty rapidly. You know, that to me looks like a great opportunity for investors. You know, you look at, I'm looking at some of the others with Crescent Point. You got a 5% yield, 76% liquids, and it's trading at a discount, you know, $2-3 from its NAV. You can go to I'm just looking at some of the other oily names just to look at the percentages. Surge Energy, 86% liquids. The company's NAV is 874, and the stock is trading below 6, and it's got a 7.6% dividend yield. So there's lots of opportunities. Bonterra, you know, you've got a 60% liquids. You know, the NAV on Bonterra is 1378, and it trades in the fives. InPlay Oil, 57% liquids, and you know InPlay has an NAV of 608, and the stock trades 230. So there's lots of bargains, and in the case of InPlay, you're getting a 7.9% dividend yield.
Touching on that dividend aspect, then, are dividends sustainable in your eyes? You sound very bullish on these stocks, just from an undervalued standpoint, but are dividends sustainable?
It depends upon their hedge books, and it depends upon their cost structure and the balance sheet. So, if you've taken care of your balance sheet and you don't have a problem where you need to borrow to pay the dividend, then you're okay. You know, if you have to borrow to pay the dividend, then you could be in jeopardy, especially with institutional pressure saying don't do that.
You also brought up earlier in this conversation some of the energy services companies. So how would you look at, I know they're a little different, pipeline companies are different than drillers or different than other tech companies in the energy services, but how are you seeing the overall health of the energy services sector?
Well, the industry in Q4 and Q1 are going to do very well. They're fully booked in Q1. When I was talking to some of the energy companies, they say to me that Q1 is booked at high prices. The issue is where is the price of natural gas and oil when we get into Q2, and how active a program will people have? The winter program is baked in. Everybody's committed to doing what they're going to do. So the question then comes is, once the winter drilling and we get into breakup, the companies are going to look at their cost structure, and if the price of the commodities is down, you know they're going to take the 2x4 to the service sector, say, okay, my rig rates, you know, for my... You know, my rate drilling in the Montney or Duvernay, you know, the price per day has to come down, or you got to throw things in. And in the case of the frackers, there's two or three new frackers, the DG4s in Canada, which means there's an excess supply. That means somebody could, to keep the rigs working, the equipment working, could lower their price. Service rigs could come down. Steel pipe is already coming down a bit. So we're beginning to see the chance of companies saying that their cost to complete wells is going to come down in Q2, Q3, simply because of the lower activity level and the their ability to take the 2x4 to their suppliers.
All right, Joseph, we've been around the energy sector here. Thank you very much for your outlooks, and outlooks not just for this year, even for some areas heading into the end of this decade. We'll see how everything moves here. But hey, look, these companies are still cash flowing quite well, but they just lost some of their momentum to the upside that captured a lot of the market attention a couple years ago. We'll see if they can regain that in an environment now where the broad averages are doing better. So we'll see if that money filters back in. But as you've outlined, higher prices in oil or especially natural gas would definitely help that. Joseph, thank you for your time on this weekend show. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. Again, please visit our website, kereport.com, podcast and social media channels, The KE Report, to keep up to date with us and listen to all the daily editorials. Everyone, hope you all have a great rest of your weekend. Thanks for tuning in.